Bobcat Goldthwait. This unique voice of comedy, literally, is back with a new stand-up comedy album, Soldier for Christ. You might remember Bobcat as the loud, raspy-voiced character Zed in the Police Academy movies. But don't ask him to do the voice. He doesn't do it anymore. Bobcat moved from L.A. to the Midwest a few years ago. He says that he's considered thin there. He's so thin that he calls himself the Daniel Craig of DuPage County, Illinois. This leads me to wonder if that means that Daniel Craig is the Bobcat Goldthwait of Cobble Hill, Brooklyn. I should have asked him. Bob and I covered many topics from the album, like how a Mylar balloon can ruin a cemetery, what it was like to open for Nirvana, his friendship with the late Robin Williams, and why he described Soldier for Christ as being kind of like jazz.
There's a couple bits that I've done before on it, but there's a lot of bits on there that are really stream of consciousness, stories I've never told before. I would go to this club here in Chicago, and I would go on stage and do these long sets, and that's what the Soldier of Christ is from. I was working with the editor, Melissa, and she's very comedy adjacent, and she familiarized herself with all my work. We started editing the album, and her notes were always like, oh, you did that one on on such and such. And then I go, oh, well, then cut it out. And then she'd go, I don't know if you know this, but a lot of people do that joke. I go, I had no idea that joke was heck. So after a while, I kind of just let her edit the album, you know. So sometimes people come up and they'll go, oh, that thing you did on the album. And I truly didn't know it was on the album.
One day, you were late arriving for a gig, and there was something that caught your attention on the side of the highway. You talk about this on your latest album. What was that? Can you tell us about
that? Yeah, that's a perfect example. Like, that's on the record, but that's not in my act. And it was I was sitting in traffic, and I look over, and it's a graveyard, a cemetery, and a Mylar SpongeBob balloon catches my eye. And, you know, Tom Kenny's been my best friend since I was 6 years old. He's the voice of SpongeBob. And I'm like, first of all, it's weird because I slowed down and tried to get a picture of it. So that makes me a ghoul, but I wanted to show him. But I was also thinking about how horrible that would be. Like, if you're there visiting a deceased relative, and then you look over and you see something sadder than your grandma. You see a SpongeBob balloon in a cemetery. It's like, dude, you ruined it for the whole cemetery. You know, you're bumming everybody out.
But now, and imagine if you were even there when he put the SpongeBob balloon up, you know? You're like, oh, hey, oh, geez. So did Tyler like SpongeBob? No.
That is the spirit of the album. I wanted to capture a night where I had fun.
Yeah, I want to get back to this Tom Kenny connection that you've been best friends with him since he was 6 years old. How has Tom Kenny influenced you as a comedian and as a person?
Yeah, definitely. You know, Tom Kenny has always been, I think, like, Tom Kenny was on Mr. Show, and he did stand-up and stuff, but I don't think people are aware of how fast he is. And, you know, the voices he does, it's so, and he's very, very smart. So, you know, if I had grown up with somebody who was not as sharp, I definitely, you know, the back and forth, I would have been definitely muted. And Tom just inspires me too, you know. So I love working with him when we get a chance to. And I just love the guy. I'm happy that he's so successful, but I still think people don't even begin to understand the wit and intelligence and the kindness. You know, he's very stealth about that. But Tom spends so much time giving back to kids and sick kids and stuff. Yeah, he's a good egg. It's nice that he's my best friend and he didn't turn out to be a serial killer.
I did like 16 cities opening for Nirvana, and like, you know, it's funny, like, people like comedians are, oh, that was a bad show, I got heckled. It's like, I opened for Nirvana. I had got like M80s blowing off by my head. One night I got hit with a teenager. They successfully threw a kid out of the pit and he hit me in the back of the legs and ran off the stage like, hey.
What was that like opening for Nirvana?
Well, you know, about every third show would go okay. I kind of emceed, and then if the crowd was digging me, I would do longer. Sometimes I baited the crowd, but Kurt was a fan of my stand-up, which is always weird for people to find out. It's like finding out that Jimi Hendrix liked Buddy Hackett or something, but he liked my stand-up. I met them before they broke, and I did a gig with Cheap Trick, and Kurt was like, well, I want him to open for us. So I toured with them, and I got to have the front row seat at so many shows that were amazing. And, you know, I was actually on the road with them when they did the Unplugged, you know. And it's kind of funny because after they did the show, you know, they did that song, the cover of Where Did You Sleep Last Night, which, you know, I remember the hairs going up on my arms when Kurt sang that. And so they walk off stage and we're standing there, and clearly the producers and MTV would have been happy if they did more. And I said, oh, don't go out there. You're not going to top that. So they didn't, or I mean, Kurt didn't go out. So I'm the guy that ruined it for some people. But you know, that's me. I've always been kind of honest, you know, because I guess I wasn't too enamored. Although I was once flown to Minneapolis to meet Prince for his birthday. I was a surprise. His like security walks me to the hallway, and then he's in the hallway. So it's just me and Prince standing in this locked hall. Well, the doors are closed in this hallway. He's doing the falsetto voice, like, oh my God, I can't believe it's you, you know? And I go, oh, hi. Oh, I always forget he was dressed as Peter Pan in this story. I always think that's the part.
Yeah, that's an important detail. Thanks for including it.
Well, it was a costume party. I forget. Right. But he's dressed as Peter Pan. And I'm like, he goes, did you get something to drink? I go, I don't drink. He goes, that's a good idea. Don't drink. He goes, there's a lot of weird people out there. And then I think for a moment that Prince is like a regular, you know what I mean? I go, yeah, you and me, we're the normal people. And he goes, that was funny. Like his voice dropped down. It's really, and that was about the end of it. So sometimes it backfires. That was the end of me bonding with the purple one.
When you went to see your doctor a while back, she told you that you have to stop smoking cigars. How did you react to that?
Yeah. And she's like, and I've been smoking them since I was in high school. So I remember other kids would be smoking cigarettes in the bathroom. And then I would be in a stall with a big heater. And once the gym teacher opened up the stall door and had this big cigar in my mouth, and I go, she and
Edward G. Robinson.
So the doctor goes, you have to quit smoking cigars. And I go, yeah, but you know, George Burns, he smoked every day and he lived to be 100. And then I look at Groucho Marx and Groucho lived almost to be 90. And the doctor goes, yeah, but those were famous comedians. Swear to God, she really said that. And then her assistant goes, cut. And they step out into the hall. And then the doctor comes back. She goes, I've been told I owe you an apology.
But, you know, like I said, I live in a tiny town, and I look more like Randy Quaid than I do look like the guy from Police Academy.
Can I ask you to do the voice?
Oh,
I know
you
don't
can
do
ask.
It anymore. Yeah.
Oh, you can ask.
Yeah, okay. Can you do the voice?
I do it for children or sick people. No. Okay. Sure. What would you like me to say?
Well, just a little bit. I don't want just a little
okay.
bit.
Okay. All right, here we go. Loved by children, desired by women, adored by bartenders everywhere. Now, I just read the tagline for the Shakes the Clown.
Oh, yeah, that's great. And that's a great film, because you also have this great film career. You've directed all these films. But why did you do the voice when you first started?
Well, because I was nervous and I was making fun of stand-up comedy and I liked to hide up there. I didn't like people actually knowing me or anything about me. And my heroes were like Andy Kaufman and Brother Theodore and people, or even Groucho, you know, he had a persona. I didn't gravitate towards the sweater comedy that was so big in the 70s, you know, the guys in sweaters complaining about dating or where the sock goes missing in the dryer, or, you know, just, do you ever notice everything? So I was kind of making fun of comedy, and then I became the very thing I was making fun of. And then eventually I was kind of doing a version of this character and myself. It was like a weird hybrid for many, many years because I knew folks were coming out to see that. But I just made a decision. I was in Nashville one night and I was like, I can't do this anymore. And I went out as me and people were like going, do the voice. But I kind of stuck to my guns because I just couldn't do it anymore. You know, I felt like it was at the time when I created it, it was an extension of me and my anger and how I felt. And I was no longer scared and I was no longer making fun of comedy. So this character just didn't feel good. I still do it in animated and cartoons and things like that. Uh-huh. And I think this record is the closest to sitting around having a dinner with me where I'm monopolizing the conversation a little too much. That's what the album
I don't
is.
Think I don't think there would be such a thing as you monopolizing the conversation.
Well, people will say, you know, even my daughter will say, you have so many stories, you know, and sometimes sometimes I can share them on stage and sometimes I can't. But she's always suggesting I write a book. And you know, maybe I will someday. Maybe I'll sit down and do that. But I just am so busy. I feel like I'm still making things, you know. You mentioned that I make movies. People don't know that, you know, my movies make hundreds and hundreds of dollars. But I've made 9 small independent movies. If I had to pick the movies that I'm most proud of, it would be World's Greatest Dad, the one I did with Robin Williams. I think that's a good movie. And then the documentary I did on my friend Barry Crimmins, Call Me Lucky. I feel those two were the closest I got to, you know, making a good movie. And I don't think the other ones are bad, but, you know, I just like those movies. And I like those movies because I made them with 2 people that were really close to me. And it's weird that both of them are gone, too. You know, Barry passed away not much longer than after I made this movie, which is a love letter to the guy. And I'm so fortunate that he got to see it and he got great response from it. And it was like a hit at Sundance. And it was really nice watching him get the praise that was due him.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned Robin Williams and you were really good friends with him. What do you miss most about Robin?
Oh, I just miss being able to call him. You know, it's the thing is, you know, he was one of the people that I just spoke with all the time. And Robin, you know, was one of the biggest stars in the world, but he always made me feel like we were peers, which was ridiculous. But he was just as excited about any of my little weird movies as he was the stuff he was working on. And he just always, you know, it's like something good happens and I go to call him to share it, or when I'm down, I think about calling him and then, you know, he's not there. Initially after he passed away, it took a long time for it to sink in because, you know, the nature of stand-up and the nature of movies, of course there would be 6 or 8 months where we didn't see each other. So, you know, I just felt like he was on location or something. And I obviously knew he was gone, but to stop thinking, hey, I'm going to call Mork and tell him the news, you know, kind of went away. It was interesting. I was talking to his assistant and Girl Friday, Rebecca, like 2 days ago. And And she told a story where she said she called him Mork, and then this other guy called him Mork, and Robin goes, she gets to call me Mork. You don't get to call me Mork. But I would call him Mork so much that sometimes he would start calling himself Mork in third person. So
you do a remarkably accurate impression of Robin. Could you share a bit of that with
us? Well, I do an impression of him, but it's not the impression people do. I do what it was like when you would talk to him, you know, like when, you know, it's just like, oh, hello, B. That was wonderful, you know. So I do the quiet Robin, the way you really, you know.
Yeah, yeah, the quiet when he's just with, when he's not turned on stage and just what he's like in real life.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's a really good impression. It's very, very accurate, although I've never had the chance to hang out with him, but
I forgot that I do that, and I was telling some story in front of his widow, and she just looked at me. It was like I had just really kind of dialed it in and did a really solid impression of him. I didn't mean to. I wasn't even thinking, and I saw her face go almost white, and I was like, oh, yeah. She goes, I didn't know you do an impression of him. I was like, well, I didn't really do it around him, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. But he called you B, right? He went.
Yeah, he'd always call me B, and cool. Yeah, I just missed the guy. You know, that's the thing. It's like, I said to his son, Zach, you know, and it was just a day or two after Robin was gone. And I said, you know, one of the most famous people in the whole world died. And on that day, your dad died, too. You know, so it's just two people, you know, two different people. And Robin, I think, really worked hard on perpetuating this character where he was on all the time, but he could be very chill and be very sweet. And I think that was probably why we were pals, because I was never on. I wasn't doing my persona. And I think he liked the fact that he and I could just, I think if you were eavesdropping, you would think, those guys, what are those accountants? Those are the two most boring people I've ever heard in my life.
Yeah. Bobcat Goldthwait, thank you very much for joining us today. Congratulations on Soldier for Christ. It's hilarious. We're looking forward to whatever you do next. I'm hoping you'll write a book when you get a chance.
Well, someday I'll sit down and write What the Hell Was I Thinking? but I haven't started yet.
Comedian Bobcat Goldthwait's latest comedy album is Soldier for Christ. Find out more about Bobcat at wpr.org/beta.
In some ways, all narrators are unreliable. Whenever we talk about our own lives, you know, we're always crafting a story.
Coming up, the always reliable Megan Abbott talks about her latest thriller, Beware the Woman. I'm Doug Gordon. You're listening to Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio.